Today on Maine Calling, the gift of giving. It's Election Day, and the anxiety is real. A recent survey by the American Psychological Association shows that the election has caused significant stress for 69% of adults in the U.S. So, we are going to try to counterbalance that today by discussing something that makes us feel good, not bad, gift giving. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we explore the reasons for and benefits of giving, especially when it's unexpected. This program was inspired by best-selling author Daniel Pink, who recently wrote a column asking, "Why not give others presents on your birthday?" Pink and psychologist Julie Quimby join us to explore the concepts of generosity, thinking about others, and, well, birthdays. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling On Demand is made possible by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, supporting Maine island communities through education, health, and community engagement. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. We have all heard the expression, it's better to give than receive. But how often do we put that into practice? Today, we will hear from a best-selling author and columnist on why he decided to give others presents on his birthday. We'll also hear from a psychologist on how giving can contribute to well-being. My guest today, Daniel Pink, he's a best-selling author. His recent Washington Post column was the inspiration behind today's program. Also with us, Dr. Julie Quimby, a licensed psychologist and founder and director of Psychology Specialists of Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. Do you give unexpected gifts? What do you give? What does it mean to you? Send us an email at talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Welcome back to both of you. And Daniel, I'll start with you. Tell us about your big idea.
Well, the big idea was born, Jen, from an existential crisis where I had reached one of those things that we refer to as milestone birthdays. And a milestone birthday, of course, is one where two digits flip rather than just one. And one of those digits is a zero, staring at you menacingly. And so to balm that existential crisis, I decided to flip the script a little bit. And I said, what if I gave people presents on my birthdays? Instead of waiting for, you know, a few friends and family to give me cards or gifts, why not give presents on my birthday? And this is part of a one-year series that I'm doing for the Washington Post called Why Not, where we're proposing sort of unusual ideas and testing them out in practice. And so I decided to give presents on my birthdays rather than receive presents, not because I'm a nice guy, but because I was troubled by how old I'm getting.
Aha. Uh-huh. And did that change? Did you not turn 60 because you did this?
You know what? Amazingly, if you give presents on your birthday, the calendar moves backward. So
excellent.
No, what it did was that it put your life there. I mean, there's a lot of research on this, and Julie knows this as a clinician. There's a lot of research out there showing that old adage is actually right. It's neuroscientifically true. It's true at the level of individual psychology that when we give things to others, we feel better. And so, at some level, giving, in some sense, is a selfish act. And that's what I found by giving presents on my birthday rather than receiving them.
All right. Well, before we turn to Julie, we have to find out what the present was. If somebody read your column, they know, but maybe some of our listeners didn't. What did you give and why did you decide upon that?
Okay. So let me take a step back here. So one of the things we know about the research on giving is that gifts that reflect who you are more appreciated than gifts that are more generic, gifts that have some kind of sentimental value. So what I did is I happen to love, this is one of my many weird idiosyncrasies, I happen to love pencils. I'm a pencil guy. I love pencils. I love them. And so I decided to design these custom-made number two pencils in the color pink, my last name. And each of the three pencils had a message about pencils that are also our messages about life. So one of them said, stay sharp. Another one said, erasing is creating. So I decided to give people pencils. So I got these custom pencils, put them in a sleeve, and sent them out to about 100 people who I'm close to.
All right, Julie, talk to us about the science that Daniel's talking about, this idea of giving being good for us.
Yeah, well, first I want to say I love Daniel's article. I was really inspired by it, in part because I'm coming up on my own milestone birthday. But one of the things about it is like it puts you in a deeply reflective space, you know, when you're coming up on a new decade. So something about reflecting on relationships and then wanting to honor those relationships. I think so many of us feel like we've just lost relationships that were important to us. So this idea of reconnecting feels really important. And maybe what Daniel's saying, one of the ways in which we're also benefiting. So yes, you're giving a gift and you're, you know, recognizing and expressing gratitude for people who have had an impact on your life. But at the same time, it's an opportunity to reconnect. And he mentioned the neurobiology of it. Like, we are wired for connection. So just benefiting from that piece and strengthening the bond has huge ripple effect, I think, on our well-being.
It's so interesting, Julie, because when I read Daniel's article, I was thinking about when I address holiday cards. I still do old-fashioned holiday cards, and it takes a long time, and it's a big chunk. Sometimes I take a day off work to do it. But the actual action, not using a sticker, but writing out the name and address is enough to, for a couple beats, let me think about somebody that maybe I don't see very often, but has mattered to me at some point in my life.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, well, first of all, that's incredible that you do that. I'm horrible at like sending cards, but
it's the only thing like that I do.
But yeah, I think, you know, those lost connections, especially as we're growing older, and, you know, you mentioned the existential crisis that comes with that, and regret sometimes comes up around those reflections, and feeling like we can take action to reconnect can be one way to really, you know, soothe ourselves in those moments, but also honor the people that have had a huge impact that we're no longer connected to.
So, Daniel, I want to ask you two questions. One about the response from the people who received your pencils, but two, also the response from readers of your column. So first, start with those who received them. Do people reach out to you and say, oh, my gosh, this was the most wonderful thing that happened to me today? Or did people maybe sort of scratch their heads and say, what is Daniel up to today? What is this?
We had a few head scratchers, no question about it. What the heck are you doing? Few head scratchers. However, the head scratchers were, to my delight, easily outnumbered by that first category of people who I felt, as they communicated to me, were genuinely touched. It was so nice of you to do this. I can't believe you thought of me. People reporting that, hey, you know, I don't use pencils, it being 2024 and all, but I'm going to prop the pencils up and put them in my office. And so it was, to Julie's point, to me, a bit of a surprise. It was more meaningful to the recipients than I would have anticipated. They liked being on the receiving end of these things. They liked the gesture. And I think it's because it was a reconnection in some cases. It was an affirmation of connection in other cases. And it was something that was quite kind of personal. If I had just simply said, everybody, I'm giving my 100 people a Starbucks gift card, that would not have been the same thing as coming up with something that is small, meaningful, and personal and giving to people. I had a little note that I attached with the pencils as well. So the response was quite positive. The response from readers was actually very interesting. You know, in this column that I've been writing, I propose a lot of why nots. You know, I propose, like, let's ban left turns on busy streets in busy cities. Let's pay teachers a minimum salary of $100,000 a year. Let's reorganize our national holidays. I have one piece that's out today. Why not select members of Congress by lottery rather than by election? So not surprisingly, I get a lot of hate mail. And so on this one, though, it was all love mail. And even better, I got lots of email from people saying, wow, this is so cool. I'm going to try this. And that was sort of part of my secret mission here, is to see whether this kind of idea of the flip might actually cascade. And we might be able to start a new kind of tradition. Somehow in America, especially, we have this kind of ego-centered tradition where you celebrate your birth by getting stuff. And I'm wondering whether we can reestablish a new tradition where we celebrate our existence by giving people stuff, by showing gratitude.
I'm thinking, Julie, that I know that generosity makes us feel good, but I'm also thinking about the people receiving something, in that I think a lot of us feel underappreciated and feel the need to be appreciated, and that this might help in sort of that department as well.
Absolutely. I mean, feeling appreciated, recognized, valued, those are fundamental human needs. You know, we talk about psychological safety. We get psychological safety from feedback. So there's a sense of, you see me, I'm appreciated. So I think we underestimate just how important that is and really how easy it is, right? There's a lot of time that went into Daniel's gift. I mean, he sent a piece of himself. All of the symbolism and sending the pencils and including wisdom on the pencils. And I love that. But also, you know, sometimes as we all experience, a simple note, a text even, right? Something personalized where someone can express appreciation for you. And when we feel appreciated, we end up wanting to do more. So we create this kind of ripple effect of, we give more when we feel appreciated, and then where there's this reciprocity in the relationship that's built. So I think it has a huge impact. Absolutely.
We're going to go to Belinda, who's calling in from Bangor. Hi, Belinda. Go ahead.
Hi. For many years before my mother died, I would give her a little gift on my birthday. Quite often, I would go down to the sidewalk art show in Bangor and buy a little painting of, it was usually a farmhouse because my mother grew up on a farm and was very happy. And so over the years, since the time of my mom's death, I have all these little things that I gave her on my birthday. I look at them now and they just fill me with such remembrance and happiness. And I really hope that members of my family will feel the same as I do when I'm gone and they look at these little things that I gave my mother over the years. It really does give you a great sense of warmth and kindness.
Wow,
acknowledging
Belinda,
your own kindness is okay.
Wonderful idea. I love this idea. Daniel, your response.
I think what it shows is that one of the things that we undersold, particularly in secular society, are rituals of any kind. But rituals that establish a moment in time where we do a certain thing for a certain reason that is outside of the norm. And religious traditions are built around those kinds of things. But in a country especially where people without any religious affiliation are the fastest growing group, where more people have become disentangled from organized religion, I think what we're seeing in a secular way are people establishing new kinds of rituals, rituals about meaning. And I think that what Belinda is saying is actually a brilliant, gorgeous kind of ritual. And what she's saying to Julia's earlier point is that she's surfacing in an explicit way these fundamental psychological needs. Julie mentioned being seen. That's a big part of it. But Belinda is actually extending her time horizon, and she's talking about being remembered. And mm-hmm. So some of these artifacts, some of these rituals, some of these practices help us be seen in the moment and help us be remembered in the future. And there's, I mean, if you think about the psychological bang for the buck of these things, it's great medicine. It's a lot cheaper than pharmaceuticals. It's a lot less dangerous than pot and drinking, and it gives us a sense of meaning. It gives us a sense of calmness. It gives us a sense of serenity. It gives us a sense of purpose in our lives.
A related message here, Julie, related to what Belinda was talking about. Ben writes, my parents grew up in China, and they said that the kids would bow to their parents on the kid's birthday to thank them for giving birth to them and raising them. I think that the American culture is more about me, me than other cultures.
It's true. It's true. And I think when you look at kind of as a psychologist, we think about things like gift giving because it comes up in the work that we do. And attending to kind of cultural differences, what matters is what is the meaning behind the gift? Sometimes we focus on the value of the gift. Is it sort of appropriate to accept this? But really, more importantly, what's the meaning behind the gift from the perspective of the giver? And there's so many different cultural influences to consider there. But yes, I think that there's something that shifts the focus a little bit from an individual to a relationship, and kind of honoring who we are as human beings, being kind of relationally oriented and seeking out connection. And when you use that frame, it makes sense. I think to Daniel's point that we are benefiting personally, psychologically, and also influencing people. And this idea of as we're aging and reflecting, thinking about kind of the existential issues at play, wanting to be remembered, and then having exerting some control over how we're remembered, right? What do you want to be remembered for? Even this going through an exercise and thinking, well, if you were going to do this, what would be the gift? You know, how is it a reflection of you? If you were inscribing something on it, what would you say? So that's kind of a beautiful exercise just to be reflective about who you are and how you want to be remembered. I love that.
Well, we do need to take a quick break. We're talking about the meaning of giving gifts, especially unexpected gifts on Maine Calling. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org or post on Facebook or Instagram. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. On this election day, we are turning our attention to the spirit of giving. My guest, psychologist Julie Quimby of Psychologist Specialists of Maine, and author and columnist Daniel Pink. Daniel joined us in March of 2022 to discuss his book, The Power of Regret. And we asked him to join us today to talk about a recent Washington Post column about giving gifts on his 60th birthday. Share your comments and questions. Send us an email, talk@mainepublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Joining us on the line now is Sarah Seams. She is director of the McKean Center for the Common Good at Bowdoin College. Thanks so much for calling in, Sarah.
Thanks for having me.
You work with students in order to get them thinking about helping others and get them actively involved in public service. What are some of the ways that young people are doing work for this common good, the giving of themselves?
Well, there's so many ways. I'm really inspired every day by the students that I work with. Just today, I was driving students to the polls here in Brunswick. So I had van fulls of students who were going to vote. So they're actively engaged in the democracy. And they're also volunteering in the local community. So we have students who run volunteer groups, working with local organizations like Midcoast Hunger Prevention Program and a lot of other partner agencies. They're also organizing alternative spring break trips about issues that they're really passionate about and taking students, their peers, to locations around the country or internationally focused on issues like healthcare for underserved communities, climate change. They're organizing around the issues of today that we all care about. These students are using their education to really explore them, those issues more deeply, and think about what they're going to do after they leave Bowdoin, and not just wait, but take action now as well.
I have a feeling I know the answer to this, but, you know, a lot of people stereotype this younger generation as caring too much about themselves, being too inward, and maybe even being a little bit of slackers. And it sounds to me as though you do not find that to be the case.
Not at all. You know, we have students who really come to Bowdoin looking for a way to make their education about the common good. And that is how they want to direct their educational experience. They want to learn how the education is more than just about themselves. It's about how they will be able to help their communities, how they'll be able to make an impact. So they come in looking for the McKean Center. They find us. They're constantly challenging us to provide more programming. They're taking leadership roles here on campus, but also in the community. And we're immensely proud of them. We just had last night an application deadline for our alternative spring break program. We have five trips that are all student-led. We had 137 applications for five trips. So it's way more students than we can take on those trips. So that's just one example of the level of interest that we have from students to be engaged in their communities and really involved at a much deeper level than just the surface or only thinking about themselves.
Well, today we're talking about the benefits of giving of yourself. And what do you find that, what do you find that students get? What do they tell you?
Yeah, it's interesting because they often feel like they're getting more than they're able to give in these interactions, which is, I think, actually a good thing. We don't want them to think that they already know everything when they're entering into a community. It's a learning experience for them. And so we talk with students a lot about developing reciprocal relationships with the community where certainly they're going and they're volunteering, so they're offering something, but they're learning so much in return. And so they're creating relationships. They're really connecting on a personal level. They often are exploring a career interest that they have as well. And so the volunteer opportunity that they're looking for may connect with becoming a teacher in the future or going into public health, if that's a career interest that they have. It may be something that's a really personal connection to them as well. It may be related to something in their personal life or a family situation that they feel connected to as well. And so they're feeling like they want to give back in a way that relates to a personal experience that they've had as well. And they also may just want a break from campus and to feel good about something that they're doing. The most common interest that we have for students volunteering in the community is working with children. We have a lot of relationships with local schools, a lot of mentoring and tutoring opportunities, and those times for our students are often a break and just a chance to connect with a child and have fun off campus. So it's a variety of things that they are experiencing and learning and growing from with these opportunities.
Well, Sarah, thanks so much for calling in. Sarah Seams with Bowdoin College's McKean Center for the Common Good. We're going to move on to Orrington and Terry. Hi, Terry. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm Terry from Orrington, Maine. I'm 67. And my friend and I, Dale, every year since I've been back home for about almost 18 years, Halloween and dress up and trick-or-treat, bring, my mom made them for years till she passed, her homemade popcorn balls to a group of people that live in South Orrington that we have trick-or-treated our whole lives since we were little. And they look forward, after 18 years of us doing this, to guessing our costumes every year and to getting their popcorn balls because they love them. And after my mom passed about 4 years ago, I got the magic touch and was able to duplicate her recipe and make them. So we do that because it warms our heart to go out every Halloween and visit people that we've known for 60 years and give them something that they enjoy.
Well, Terry, thank you so much. And I'm thinking that the element, and Daniel, you didn't do this, but the element of something that's handmade, whether it's food or whether something that's knit or sewn, even may add another layer to this whole idea of giving of yourself.
There's no question about that. I mean, I think we have a good intuitive sense of that. We also have some research on that. That things that reflect your own personal tastes or even your own personal interests, those kinds of gifts are actually appreciated more than things that are generic. So in Carrie's case, I think it would be a substantially different experience for the recipients if they were getting, you know, mini-sized Snickers bars versus these artisanal popcorn balls that are a reflection of the giver, a reflection of this kind of tradition.
All right. Message here from Jonathan. I've seen people who on their birthday post a Facebook message, something like, for my birthday this year, I'm raising for money for blank charitable group, fill in the blank charitable group. Please consider contributing. Not quite the same as personal giving, but outward facing rather than inward. This is very common, Julie. And I'm going to ask you about this, this concept of seeing something on social media saying it's my birthday. Instead of giving me a gift, why don't you donate to this nonprofit organization?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think social media has created an opportunity for people to do that. And it's another example of like, honoring your birthday in a way that gives back, but we're exposed to other people doing this, inspired by their actions, and more likely to do that. Same thing happening at Bowdoin College, right? You are surrounded by people who are giving back. There's kind of a contagion there. So that's exciting. You're going to see more and more people who want to do something like that, have a meaningful impact on the world for their birthday rather than focus on receiving. So that's one positive out of social media, I think. And the other thing I noticed on social media is people really love getting little notes of recognition on their birthday. It feels good. So you're seeing that example of just being recognized in a simple way. And people seem to really benefit from that. So, yeah.
We'll go to Larry, who's calling from St. Andrews, New Brunswick. Hi, Larry. Go ahead. Larry, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead.
I'm just wondering, we're talking about one pencil or 20 or 12. I'm just wanting to get a clarification on that.
Daniel, could you hear Larry? He wants to know how many pencils you gave.
I gave three pencils. So, and each of them had a very short slogan that, as I mentioned a moment ago, were relevant to pencils, but were also relevant sort of guidance for life. So one of them was stay sharp. One of them was erasing is creating. Think about that one. And then the other one was something I'm not doing a very good job of right now, get to the point. And so that's what I did. So three pencils. And I think that when we do these things, it's important as we calibrate them that it should be meaningful, but it shouldn't be a flex. And I think that could be very off-putting. So if I gave something like, I'm going to give everybody this gold pen that is worth hundreds of dollars, that'd be kind of a flex. But three number two pencils that I had custom made for 50 cents a piece isn't much of a flex. It's actually, as Julie said earlier, it's a piece of ourselves. And this, so I think that among the lessons we can draw on this is like, share a piece of yourself with other people, because it is meaningful to you and meaningful to them. The other thing is I'm really inspired by that Bowdoin College example. And one of the sort of things that they're doing there, which I think is valuable in our personal life and in our professional life, is just turning things upside down. So what she's done there with alternative spring break is, spring break is usually about partying and indulgence. Why not make spring break about meaning and service? And it turns out there's obviously a large constituency for something like that. So the more in our lives we challenge the way things have always been done, and one way to do that is just turn it upside down. And a lot of times when we do that, we find new ways of thinking and new ways to make our lives better.
Larry, thanks for your call. Julia, caller who couldn't stay on the line, John, wanted to talk about the good feeling you get from giving anonymously. Obviously, for Daniel's experiment, it was very important that people understood they were getting a piece of him. But then there's another layer when you sort of donate to somebody, maybe somebody who needs something in you. I'm thinking about some neighbors who helped pay somebody's tax bill one year, or somebody who just drops off some flowers on a front step.
Yeah, it really takes the ego out of it. And it's truly looking in a focused way on just the kind of natural, raw, good feeling we get of knowing we've helped somebody. And that just empathy, right? That we can feel of the relief that we provided for someone, that feeling of gratitude maybe that they're having, that we are also experiencing that simultaneously. So I love that. Yeah.
We'll go to Kitsy, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Kitsy, go ahead.
Hi, Jen. This is so simple, but it was radical for me, and it was being reminded by a study I read about smiling. And sometimes I forget. I'm in my thoughts, and I'm living in an independent living situation here with about 80 other people. And when I smile, I know that it is such. People are just sometimes stunned that they're being smiled at, and we're kind of living together, even though we have our own apartments. But it was a study done in the Midwest of a community where elders would cross the street when a group of teenagers was coming along, and this particular organization was trying to change the behavior. And so what they did was they suggested that the elders stay on the same side and smile at the teenagers. And the teenagers wondered what was wrong. I mean, something must be wrong. The old people are smiling at us. And it turned the whole town around. So I just want to talk about this. And Thich Nhat Hanh, who died not that long ago, a Buddhist, has a little book called How to Smile, which is full of suggestions. It's just a little pamphlet book, but it's full of suggestions on the radical meaning of smiling from a Buddhist perspective. So it's inexpensive, and whenever I remember to do it, I feel so much better.
Kitsy, thank you so much for calling. And before I turn to our guests, I'm going to go to another caller because I believe his point is related to this. Mike in Tenants Harbor, go ahead.
Hey, how are you today?
Great.
Good. Me too. I woke up breathing. But you know, to build a little bit on what Kitsy was talking about, that's a wonderful thing to do. But you can give the gift of a smile to somebody else with such little things sometimes. Like, I'll get up to the counter to buy something, and the clerk looks a little glum, and I'll say, you're having too much fun, you got to stop that. And next thing you know, they're smiling. Or, you know, I'll be in line somewhere, and I'll look at somebody, and they've got a nice pair of earrings, and it's like, hey, you know what, those are nice earrings, where'd you get those? And they turn around, and they're smiling, and you get a little story about where that came from, and sometimes just that little bit of noticing something about someone and giving them a compliment can really make their whole day change.
And it makes you feel good too, doesn't it, Mike?
Oh, it always makes me feel absolutely terrific because we can all do that little bit to change the world a little bit at a time. And if I'm feeling down, I look for somebody to give a compliment to. Hey, buddy, nice hat. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, thank you. Well, yours is pretty nice, too. And next thing you know, we're both, you know, walking away smiling, but we both feel a little bit better.
Thank you, Mike. And Julie, I'm going to combine Kitsy's comment and Mike's to say that there is a lot of research on this, how important those very small interactions, positive interactions are in our lives, correct?
Yeah, I think we underestimate that. And I appreciate hearing these examples of, and your point, it's like so simple. And particularly if it's front of mind and we're intentional, and you think about sort of the energy you carry, right? If you're complimenting someone, there's some intention behind that. But sometimes we're not mindful of it, but we're always carrying energy. So we're always influencing people. So it's good to remember whether you're, you know, trying to create positive feelings, or sometimes, you know, you're bringing negative energy and that's being transmitted as well. So yeah, that's just the way in which we can influence people's mood in such a small way is so inspiring, and we forget that. So it's good to be reminded. Thank you.
Daniel, I saw you nodding and agreeing completely with Mike.
Yeah, I mean, I think what a lot of these callers, whether it's Mike or Kitsy or whatever, are operating intuitively in ways that are incredibly positive. And again, forgive me for being too analytical about this, but also in ways that are incredibly cost effective. Because, for instance, when you smile at somebody, you don't give up anything. You actually create value. Imagine, you're giving somebody something, but you're not actually ever losing it, and you're creating value in the process of that. The other thing, to Mike's point, is that we have, there's some really fascinating research from Nick Epley at the University of Chicago, showing that our intuitions about talking to strangers are completely off. That when we talk to strangers, we predict that it's going to be awkward and they're not going to want to care. And what typically happens is that it's not awkward at all. And even the people who you're talking to on a bus, on a train, are often glad to be talked to. And so there is this sense out there that I think we sometimes overlook, that there are small things that we do every day that can have a pretty substantial ripple effect, that we're not as individuals operating in a vacuum, that our behavior affects other people's behavior. And when we behave in a way that creates a positive cascade, that is really powerful. That is actually a remarkable act of generosity that we can do for very little effort and at no cost, with massive benefits, not only to ourselves, but to the world.
Mike, thanks for your call. We do need to take another break. If you'd like to join the conversation about giving, our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Email address, if you're quick, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. My guest today, Daniel Pink, author of 5 New York Times bestsellers, including his latest, The Power of Regret, How Looking Backward Moves Us Forward. We're discussing the theme of his recent column, Why Not Give Others Presents on Your Birthday? Also with me, Dr. Julie Quimby, who is a licensed psychologist with Psychology Specialists of Maine. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Dan, who's calling from Brewer. Hi, Dan. Go ahead.
Good morning. I just wanted to say that I had an experience that kind of changed my way of thinking about things. And I was walking home in 2005 on my birthday, and there was this old black man who was a neighbor of mine sitting on his porch. And I walked up to him just to say good morning. And he said, it's not a very good morning because I haven't eaten since yesterday. And I said, geez, that's not good at all. Well, I went home. I made this man meat, potatoes, vegetables, as well as a biscuit. I brought it back up to him. He ate it so fast because he was so hungry. I told myself that day, from now on my birthday, I'm going to feed somebody. And I have been doing it every year since. And actually, next year will be 20 years that I've been doing it. And I do it in a way where people don't know it's me paying for their food. I go into a restaurant, I'll buy their meals, and that'll be paid. Or I'll stand back in a grocery aisle and buy somebody's groceries for them. And I've even prepared other meals. It feels so good to know that I'm feeding somebody. And it really makes there ain't a better birthday present than that.
Dan, very inspirational. And thank you for calling and sharing that. Daniel, your response.
Dan from Brewer is the invisible angel, the anonymous angel. I mean, I think these kinds of things are extraordinary. And, you know, especially on a day like this, when many Americans, no matter what their political positions are feeling a little anxious and might be feeling a little bit cynical. I mean, I think hearing from people and their lived experiences and the sorts of small things they're doing every day might be a way to melt that cynicism a little bit, that there's so many good people doing good things in this country that in the end, we're probably going to be okay, no matter what happens at the end of today.
Dan, thank you. We'll go to Barbara, who's calling from St. George. Hi, Barbara, go ahead.
Hi, I was alerted by the people talking about smiling at other people, because I realized a couple of years ago that if I'm not smiling, that I guess a lot of people, their mouth actually turns down and I look like I'm frowning, even though I don't feel that at all. So lately, if I see someone in the store or something that's frowning, I make a point of smiling at them, and it very often makes them perk up and smile back at me and come out of the, you know, it's not necessarily that they're feeling bad, but it just, they look like they are. So it's a good feeling.
Barbara, thank you. And Julie, I think it's interesting because I think Barbara is talking about a self-awareness that often we don't realize how we're coming across, even if it just happens to be our physical characteristics.
Yeah, it's true. And Barbara's also speaking to empathy, right? And sometimes we get it right and we have a sense of how other people are feeling. And sometimes maybe we misread that facial expression. But she's also noting like she has an influence on people's emotional experience, and that just by her smiling, she can elevate somebody's mood. And, you know, that's just a really simple reminder. But I also love what Dan was saying, kind of related to Barbara too. And I think Daniel mentioned it earlier, like when we have these gestures of gratitude or kindness, it gives us a sense of purpose. And particularly when you think about your birthday, there's all these questions about the meaning of your life. What influence do you have? So having that, like, hey, every birthday, I have a sense of purpose. I'm going to impact people in this way by feeding them or smiling at them. And that just frames our own life experience and gives like more meaning to our life. And it comes back to us, right? We feel needed and important and that we have an influence on people.
Barbara, thank you for your call. We'll go to Ruth, who's calling from Keyser Falls. Hi, Ruth. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. I want to tell a story. Back in the beginning of August, I was bitten by a dog, critical, basically life-threatening injuries. But I'm fine. I came out of it great and everything, so I thank God for that. But what I want to say is I'm stuck in my home and I can't get out. And I find out that my community here in Kiza is putting buckets around and collecting, you know, money to help out, to help me out, which I never expected. That's not me. But they wanted to do it. And it's kind of hard to learn to accept, but I learned to accept it. You know, we tend to want to, you know, do it ourselves. But the fact that they wanted to do it, they call me the lawnmower lady because they see me all over town. And they just wanted to support me, show me their love and their support. And so, and it says in the Bible, it's more blessed to give than to receive. And it is. It's a blessing for them to give to someone else. And so I was blessed by them, but they were blessing me by giving me. And it's been wonderful. And it's like a great big hug, let's put it that way.
Ruth, I'm so glad you're okay and that your injuries, you know, are healing. What your story reminds me of the NPR series, My Unsung Hero. And the very most recent one was a man talking about accepting help and accepting a gift. Daniel is a part of this sort of broader, profound discussion.
It certainly is. And some of us aren't very good at that. Some of us consider fear that it will feel strange and awkward. Others of it will feel like it's a show of weakness. And I think we have to get over that. There's one technique where we can, that I heard from some friends of mine one is a professor, the other is a writer. They noticed that their kids, when they were having conversations at home with their kids, the conversations were almost always about achievement. How'd you do on the test today? How many goals did you score in soccer? And they said that they realized like, that's not good. And so they began asking their kids at dinner, who did you help today? And I think it's a lovely way to have a conversation around this. But to your point, they realized that that wasn't enough. They also said, who helped you today? And this is a way to sort of begin thinking of ourselves as helpers and givers, but also a way to identify the helpers and givers who are around us. And there are, as these callers suggest, there are many, 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 many more than we might realize at first glance.
Julie, this whole conversation is making me think of, it's kind of a buzzy word, but intentionally thinking about these little things that we do. Daniel, thinking about the people who mean something in his life and who he wants to give a gift to. Ruth, thinking about the people who are donating to her and just kind of stopping and being intentional about things that are swirling about us all the time.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, when you just talk about stopping, that we really benefit so much from being mindful, pausing, and being thoughtful about how we're living our life, the influence we have. I love the question Daniel just posed of who helped you today. That's something I might, hold on to and really be more mindful of that. And then, yeah, I think we just sort of have to create space to slow down and think about how do we want to influence people, because we're doing it all the time mindlessly. So yeah. You might as well think about it and be purposeful. Because you're influencing everyone you encounter. So yeah, I think being intentional would do us all well.
An email from Anita. One of my favorite ways of giving is to pay someone's toll when I go through the toll. I love that I don't know who it is and that they're just going to get a special surprise. And we've heard about that when people are going through drive-thrus as well, whether it's a coffee place or a fast food restaurant. Let's go to Grace in Effingham, New Hampshire. Hi, Grace. Go ahead.
Good morning. I just wanted to call to validate so much what has been said on this about the benefits of hugging and smiling. I just came home from working at the polls. If we have candidates we're supporting, we can't just put a sign outside the polls. We have to have somebody standing there with the sign. So I did a 3-hour stint this morning, and my whole thing was to greet people with a smile and a compliment. And even though people may not have agreed with the candidates that I was supporting, they were very receptive. And when they came back out from voting, most people stopped and chatted, no matter which way they were voting, and responded to that smile. So I just want to endorse the practice of smiling and being kind.
So Grace, you had a much more positive election day than so many other people because you were thinking of others.
Exactly. It's you can project an attitude, and I wanted to project a positive and kind attitude.
Daniel, thoughts?
If you can get people to be warm and smiley in New Hampshire, you can do it anywhere.
Thank you, Grace, for calling. We'll go to Deb, who's calling from Manchester, Maine.
Hi, good morning. Again, feeling anxious and have been able to find some comfort today. I wanted to just briefly share that many years ago, when our son would be having a birthday party, rather than his guests bringing him a present, we asked everyone to bring a gift to give. And they were put in a wicker basket, and the gifts were numbered, and everyone would draw a number, hopefully not getting the gift that they brought. And it just took the pressure off of watching and waiting for everyone to go ooh and ah while he was opening his gifts. Everyone got a gift. Everyone was so excited. And then our son Nolan realized, he said, well, I think I like doing this. And that's what we've been doing now. He's 34. And so, again, it was that quietness of just celebrating, but celebrating with your friends and family. So that was our input. And thank you for today.
Thank you. Daniel wants to respond. Yeah. Go ahead.
So one of the people I interviewed for this column is a researcher named Liz Dunn at University of British Columbia. And she told me this did not make it into the story, that she does something very similar with her son. She's Canadian. And so the Canadian dollar is called a loonie. And so there's a tradition in Canada to have loonie parties where you bring the birthday kid, a number of dollars. And then what happens is that the kid takes half the dollars for him or herself, and then takes half the dollars to give away. And so you use half the dollars for the child to buy a present for him or herself. And then the child takes the remaining half of the dollars and finds a charity and together goes with their parent to give that money away. And to me, that's just a beautiful kind of ritual to help our kids become, enjoy their birthdays, have fun, get presents. I'm not against that, but also to think more broadly about their place in the world.
Deb, thank you. And Julie, just a few seconds left. Anything to add to what Daniel said?
Yeah, it's just the theme right now that's emerging is like this idea of spreading happiness, in so many ways in which we can do that. And what a great way to kind of honor your life if it's your birthday that you're spreading happiness. But I also want to say, like, that fundamentally we are all so much more alike than we are different. And when, you know, we're talking, it's interesting, it's election day, there's so much focus on differences, but we're getting underneath it and really recognizing that no matter what your opinions are, your political viewpoints, your beliefs, your values, we all want the same thing. We all want to feel, you know, valued, heard, you know, important. And that's kind of what's happening in these interactions. So we're a lot alike.
Deb, thanks for your call. And thank you to our guest, Dr. Julie Quimby, a licensed psychologist and the founder and director of Psychology Specialists of Maine. And Daniel Pink, best-selling author who recently wrote a column about turning it upside down and giving other people presents on his birthday. Today's sound engineer was Jane Donahue, and Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.